kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe, joining as usual. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm alive. I'm not kicking still, but I'm alive. How are you,
Joe? Still no kicking?
Still not kicking. I got a little bit of motion back. I can bend my knee, but I ain't kicking.
Which knee did you fuck up?
My right one.
Okay, because I'm trying to think. Ashley fucked up her left one. I think I fucked up my left one, too, moving.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That is not a good look.
So,
on the bright
everyone
side,
is gimpy.
I can direct you to a $5 knee brace on Amazon.
I don't think there's going to be a brace on Amazon to fit my tree trunk legs.
I didn't say that it fit well, just that it was $5.
So what have you been up to this past week? I've been moving, so it's just more of the same with me. What have you been up to?
We are in back to school hell.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the girls start back to school next week on the 8th. So it is getting scheduling, and number one's going to high school.
Oh.
So she's like, it's a whole new bag of shit for her.
Whole new world.
Yeah. That's a little nicer than where I was going with it. But, you know, she's got the whole, she had freshman orientation and she had to learn where her classes are at. And now there's the whole drama of, I only have one friend in this class. And for a kid who's been in a small school where the eighth grade class was literally like 14 students.
Oh, God.
You know, it's a really big switch for her to go to a high school where every teenager in the fucking county is there. Because it's the only high school in our county.
Oh, Lord.
So it's literally just kids from like 7 or 8 different little middle schools from all around the whole area. And it's a very big shift for a kid like her to go from, you know, I was like, oh, you had an easy time. And it was, you were at the top of the class and, you know, you didn't have a lot of competition as far as your friends went and stuff like that. And it's going to be very different.
Yeah, you're starting high school. Time to get knocked the fuck back down that ladder.
Yeah, good luck.
Freshman year. Holy shit.
And so it's been an experience. She went yesterday. They gave them all Chromebooks, which was, what?
The fuck?
We didn't get no Chromebooks when I was in school.
Me neither. What the hell? That's some bullshit. I want a free Chromebook for going to school. Holy hell.
Wasn't free, but that was an unusual thing. When I went to school, like, you went to school and they gave you your books and the only thing you had to bring were, like, pencils and yourself. We weren't allowed to have backpacks.
Oh, God.
Were you allowed to carry backpacks in high school?
Yeah, because I was still before all the terror stuff.
Yeah.
Just barely.
See, the school I went to was actually the first high school in the country to have a school shooting where there was a fatality.
Oh, God.
So that's where I graduated. So we weren't allowed to carry a backpack. And we weren't allowed to, our purses had to be searched in the mornings. We had to go through metal detectors, all that. It was funny because we were doing the whole back to school thing and we've got the two younger girls as well. So I'm picking out backpacks and number one's like, oh, I want this for a backpack or I want that for a backpack. And then I just kind of had to stop for a second and go, are you even allowed to carry a backpack? Am I sitting here searching for these for no good reason?
That is the world we live in now.
It's really sad. It's kind of terrifying. But, I wasn't allowed to carry a backpack. And she was like, yeah, I'm fine. I can have a backpack. So, but it's a little depressing that that's something you even had to think about. No time for games says what a backwards world. But realistically, like, they were really, really strict. And of course, I was in school. Columbine was a thing when I was, I think I was a junior. What year was that, Joe? Do you remember?
Fuck, 99? 98, 99? Because I was senior year when that happened.
Yeah, so I want to say I was a sophomore or a junior when that was a thing. So we weren't allowed to carry. Initially, they were like, okay, no backpacks at all. And then eventually they phased into you can have clear backpacks and mesh ones. And then the year after that, they were like, nope, no backpacks all over again. So it was a thing I had to think about. Is she even allowed to carry one? That I never would have considered under normal circumstances. But rednecks love their guns, and so that's a fear here.
Yeehaw.
But, yeah, so that's my week. Tomorrow is back to... We have an event here called Ready Fest, where you take your kids to the elementary school, and they meet their teacher, and then they get this index card, and, like, all these... I say local businesses. I use the term loosely. It's like the electric company and the phone company and shit like that. So they're not like our town local, but they're regional local. They set up little tables in the gymnasium at the school, and you go in and they give you like a pillowcase, and then you walk around the whole area and you fill up your pillowcase with like pencils and notebooks and,
a fucking pillowcase.
Yeah, I know it sounds weird, but realistically...
Sounds weird? That shit is weird.
Their argument is it's the biggest, it's like a big thing that can carry a whole lot, and it's cheap. So they give everybody a pillowcase. And you really do
What's
walk out.
What's the thread count? That's the important thing.
Probably whatever you can get at Dollar Tree. I don't know, but it's a thing. They give you a pillowcase. It was funny seeing your reaction on the screen when I said that. But they give you a pillowcase and you go around from table to table and they give you pencils and crayons and markers and rulers and notebooks and all kinds of shit. And they call it Ready Fest. And by the time that's said and done, usually you only need to buy like one or two things for the back to school headache at least. So that's nice. But the one thing that always kills me about it, though, I complain every year about this. So if we're still doing this show next August, this is going to be my argument then, too. Every year, that whole Ready Fest thing, we seriously get stacks of, like, every kid in the school gets a list, and you get the same stuff for every one of them. Every year, we get, like, this ginormous stack of, like, 30 or 40 of those wire-bound notebooks. Okay. And then you get the list from the teachers at the end that are like the school supplies you need. And every fucking one of them will say, no wire-bound notebooks, composition only.
That's fucked up.
And I'm like, fuck you guys. I just caught 200 pounds of wire-bound notebooks. And now I'm going to have to go buy 74 composition notebooks for my three kids.
Oh, Jesus.
It's always fun. It's the bane of my existence. I hate composition notebooks.
I don't miss school. Well, I kind of miss school, but there's parts of it I really don't miss.
I miss the simplicity of it, but like I didn't have to worry about bills.
Yeah, I miss being a kid, but I...
Yeah.
Parts of it I could still do without.
Yeah, like I like not having to worry about anything more than, oh, do I have a book report this week?
I miss the simplicity of games back then.
Nostalgia's a bitch, though. When I sit and think about the simplicity of games back then, they might have been simple, but they were fucking hard to play.
I don't know. It depends on the game that you played. Like, I played Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy, so that shit wasn't difficult at all. You just walked around and killed monsters and had an awesome story.
I played a lot of, like, Wolfenstein and Doom. You know, the same kind of shit I still play today. Shooters.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, we should probably move on with the show. We have an email to read.
A what?
An email.
Really?
Yeah, someone emailed us.
Does it say nice things?
I don't know. Let's find out. Email from Aroto Tomato, who says, happy big 400. Hey, my boo-boo, just want to say congrats on your big 400 episodes. That's sick. My podcast is barely 10 episodes in 7 years and not even close to the success or professionalism of yours either. Professionalism. That's hilarious. Success. That's even funnier.
Look at Aroto.
But don't let my gelatinous jealousy get in the way. I really appreciate you, buddy. I'm not going to lie. I don't listen to every single episode. I mean, holy shit, there's a lot. But whenever I'm stuck in transit, I check out, sometimes in the bathroom. Don't worry. I'm not going to talk about shit or shit-related products, Eternal Rage. Anyway, here's to another 400. Big dinner is on me tonight, bae. Love, Aroto. P.S. Please, Disney, buy me too. So thank you, Aroto. It is nice to get some recognition for the dumb shit we do.
Somebody listens to our shit while they shit. You're welcome, Aroto. That was just for you. You probably won't even hear this.
I don't know. You never know. Might get caught in a traffic jam and be like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll listen to it. Oh, they're talking about me.
Yay. Eat your fiber, kids.
Oh, man, a lot of news this week. Let's start things off. Probably the big news of the week is the PlayStation Plus lineup for August was announced, and it's a pretty solid list. PlayStation 3 is getting Bound by Flame and Serious Sam 3 BFE, so two solid games there. The PlayStation Vita is getting Draw Slasher and Space Hulk, which is a turn-based strategy game, so it's kind of eh there. And PS4 is getting Dead by Daylight and Mafia 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it seems that they are doing pretty good at matching up to Xbox's Forza Horizon 2, For Honor, Dead Space 3, and Epic Mickey 2.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not all, kids. There are two bonus games for PlayStation Plus. If you use the PlayLink, which is like their whole Jackbox, use the phone as a controller kind of thing.
Yeah.
You get Knowledge is Power for free.
Okay.
And then PlayStation VR gets Here They Lie for free.
Hmm.
So a lot of games.
I wonder if... There's not a whole lot of games for PlayStation VR, though, are there?
There's a good number out there.
Enough for them to, like, regularly start throwing in one for free every month, though?
I'm sure there is, yeah. I think it's going to be, like, one of those it's free for a couple months kind of deals.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to ask. I was like, is this going to be a regular thing where they start throwing in a VR title like they do with the Vita?
That would be nice if they did. Like, phase out PS3 and add PSVR or something.
Yeah.
That would be really helpful.
Because realistically, I mean, without backward compatibility, how much longer is it going to be worth it for them to keep PS3 titles as part of it?
I don't know. They were kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for a bit there, but it seems that they found a couple of more good games hidden down there.
Yeah. Sometimes good stuff gets pushed to the bottom.
Yeah. Overall, though, I still think just by a narrow margin, I think Xbox has the better lineup.
Yeah, though I would like to see Dead by Daylight on Xbox for free, or at least in Game Pass, because I want to make my fucking friends play it with me, because I really enjoyed it. Although, on the other hand, maybe I don't, because as long as people don't play it with me, I get to play as the hag. And then I just get to piss people off. And that might be better.
We need to play that, what was it, White Noise 2?
We need to go back to that.
That was
fun.
We
have so many games that we just are on the, we're going to go back to that list.
So many. And we have more games that we have to get to for the future as well. But you mentioned Game Pass. There were another 7 games added to Game Pass for August, including Dandara 3, Dead Rising 3, The Escapists, The Walking Dead, Hitman Full Season 1, Rush, A Disney Pixar Adventure, Ruiner, and Rise, Son of Rome.
There's some pretty good titles in that, but you messed up. Dandara is not Dandara 3, it's just Dandara.
Oh, well, I was reading Dead Rising 3.
So. Yep, good job.
Dandara 4 was added. My bad.
It's Dead Rising. No. Just Dandara. And then I thought it was Dead Rising 2. Is it 2 or 3?
Fuck, it was 2.
Good job, God, Joe. Are you drunk?
I fucked up my notes. Hey, the 2 and the 3 are right next to each other, so that's my excuse.
But anyway, Dandara
is... It was Dandara 3. That was the 3 there.
No, there is no free in Dandara. Stop that!
That's right, it's Dandara 4 because they use the 4 as an A.
Good night, I'm done. I'm going to bed.
I like frustrating you. Good additions, though. Pretty solid lineup.
They are. I want Dead by Daylight now, though. So
I'm excited to hopefully finally get to rush a Disney Pixar adventure, because it's a cute kid racing game, which I always enjoy, and this time you don't need the Kinect.
Is it a racer? I didn't know it was a racer. I just knew it was something Disney related, and I was like, oh, the kids will probably enjoy it.
I thought it was a racing game.
I know.
Maybe I'm wrong there, too.
I know it came out around the same time as Kinect Adventure. Well, it's not Kinect Adventure anymore. It's just Disneyland Adventures now, isn't it?
Yeah. That and Zoo Tycoon, they all came out the same day last year.
And I ended up, I had got the Disneyland one, but I did not get the Rush one. So I haven't touched it. The kids will enjoy it. I'll probably install it on their Xbox for them.
Well, now it's in Game Pass, so you got it.
Yeah.
Hooray, Game Pass. Two more games were added to Xbox backward compatibility lineup this week, with Splinter Cell Double Agent and Splinter Cell Blacklist both added. So more good games are getting added to backward compatibility. There's what, like 550 games or something crazy like that now?
I don't even want to think of the number, but remember when it first released and everybody was like, that's not going to take off. They're going to add like 10 games and then it'll die off. And here we are. Like, most of the time you think, oh, that's the 360 game that I used to play. And I go, oh, wait, yeah, I can load that up on the one still.
And there's still so many good games that they could add.
Yeah.
Like, all I got to do is look at my shelf. Like, 50 Cent Blood on the Sand, that was really good. Afro Samurai was pretty good. Alpha Protocol. See, what else? Binary Domain was pretty good. Blaze Blue was pretty good. Body Count, I've always wanted to try. Coldcept Saga, the Final Fantasy games haven't been added yet. There's so much good stuff that could still get added.
Oh, I forgot all about the Final Fantasy games.
Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. I would do anything to get that.
Yeah, I know that you're a fan of that one.
Love that game so much. So, so, so much.
I just want the Spyro remasters. That's all I care about. Yeah, like, I'm so looking forward to those that I am phasing, like, I haven't paid a lick of attention to anything else.
Did you hear the news about the Spyro Reignited trilogy?
They're having a temper tantrum over the disc only having one game on it for the physical release.
That is fucked up.
Yeah.
If you're releasing a trilogy, include all three games on the disc. Don't have one on the disc. And then content download required for the other two games. That's not even... You're getting a third of what you're paying for.
Yeah. It is a little odd. You kind of got to wonder what goes into the whole, like, meeting room where that they decide that that's how it's going to be done.
Like, I don't know if it's an issue with them not having the games done in time for it to go gold, but maybe you should delay it if you're not going to have two-thirds of the game on the disc.
Shut your whore mouth. They cannot delay Spyro. I need Spyro in my life.
Well, you'll have Spyro 1 in your life.
Well, that joke's on you because I have no intention of buying a physical copy, so I'm going to have them all anyway.
Yeah, I don't see the point in buying a physical version of that game at all. There's just no point to it. You're going to have to download the majority of it anyway. You might as well just go digital.
I understand that there are people who have their reservations and prefer to have the physical disc. I'm just not one of those people affected by it because I download everything. I have good download speeds, so I don't mind.
I'm creeping up on 2,000 games on my hard drive. I'm getting there.
I am pushing 700, I think.
I'm at 1987.
Maybe. But I don't have them all installed. Like, a lot of mine are still just on the ready to install.
Yeah, mine are on my four different hard drives, the one internal and three externals.
I had an external and it died, and that was that. And so now I just have the internal. But when we upgraded to the S, we got the PUBG edition one that had the 1 terabyte hard drive.
That's still a lot of games for 1 terabyte.
Yeah, I think I have around 40 games installed.
Oh, I thought you meant you had 700 installed.
No.
I was going to say 700 games on a 1 terabyte. That's really good.
No, I have around 40 or so installed. And then the rest are on the ready install. And I think I've got maybe 15 or 20 gigs free last I checked. But
you need an external.
I know.
Eternal needs external.
So, you know, if anybody wants to help a bitch out, now you know what I need. But it's
just take the hard drive out of that Chromebook you got.
Right. That's what I did with the 360. You used to be able, when they went switched to the slim version ones,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't put the external hard drive that clicked onto the regular arcade edition ones on there anymore.
Yeah.
So I just went to GameStop because they clearanced those all out when the slim editions came out. I went and bought like one of the biggest ones and then got it home and busted it open.
Nice.
And took the hard drive out of it. And so I ended up only paying like $10 for a 250 gig hard drive. And it just, what you had to do was put a little piece of black tape on the end of it so that you could pull it in and out.
Oh, God.
But that's
fucking
all I had.
Fucking MacGyver that shit.
Yeah, you just put a little piece of black tape in there so if you needed to reseat it or whatever. But otherwise, it just popped right into the side of the Slim 360s and you had all kinds of hard drive space. Never had a problem.
I remember how excited I was when the 360 released a 500 gig hard drive. I'm like, oh my God, I could fit so much stuff on here now.
Right.
Even today, I have the 500 gig plus, I think, a 1 terabyte external to fit all my shit on there.
Yeah, I had, I think it was the 250 is what I had bought. Might have only been a 120.
I have 20 terabytes on my fucking Xbox One.
And still need more.
No, I'm doing pretty good. I'm only at like 70% full, so I have a couple terabytes left.
So you got like 2 months of releases like this week.
my big concern is like my system is starting to run like shit from having so much installed on it.
Yeah, mine is a little on the sluggish side, which is a shame because it does not have a lot on it. And I would much prefer to have an external. I need to do like my buddy did. And he got those, we've been referring to it as a toaster dock, but it's just like a laptop or a PC USB dock that you plug in. And then you can plug in a regular internal hard drive to it. Mm. And it just sits there like toast in a toaster. And you can use any regular hard drive, like an external. And so he set that up even before he got the 1X. He had that set up like that with a 1 terabyte hard drive that was 7,400 RPM instead of the standard 5,200 that's in the Xbox, the base Xboxes. And so like I used to get so pissed because he'd load up a million times faster. Than me. I'd just still be sitting there like, shut up, I'll be in the division in 15 minutes. So even still, like now he has the X and he still has it set up that way. So he's got like two extra 7,400 RPM hard drives on there. And I'm just like, I fucking hate you. But it's a really cool way to get extra space.
I think once I hit the 2000 mark, I'm just going to go through and just start deleting old stuff that I never touch or never play. Just to see if I can make the system a bit faster.
That is the plus side to not having a lot of space, is that I have no choice but to just go in and delete shit. I'm like, did I review this week? Am I done with it? Okay, bye.
Yeah.
I will get back to you someday.
Like, there's so many giant games I could get rid of. Like, Quantum Break is eating up 178 gig.
Yeah. Well, see, especially stuff like that, like, once I 1K it, it's off there.
See, but I don't know if it's the size that is making my system run slow or the sheer number of games.
Also entirely possible. Because it does take mine forever
to load the ready to install. Carnage, complete and delete is my motto.
Yeah, but Carnage only ever gets one achievement. He's a one and done. He can say complete and delete is my motto, but he's totally a one and done kind of guy. He gets one achievement and then never touches it again.
He's a one pump chump with achievements.
Yeah, basically.
Pop one and go.
He can say whatever he like, but we all know the truth. We can see your gamer card. we're on to you, Carnage.
We know what's up.
But it does take like a really long time for even just the ready to install tab just sits and spins forever before you can click on it and be like, oh yeah, now I can actually see what I've got to install. And I don't think realistically Xbox expects people to have quite as many games as people like we do have.
Probably not. I'm sure even like the developers of the system are like, you have how many games installed across how many hard drives? What the fuck is your problem? I review like, shit and I like sales.
I'm a hoarder.
Pretty much. I keep buying bigger hard drives just so I could keep everything installed, but it's coming back to bite me because my system is just running like shit.
Right.
So, pro tip, kids, don't install 2,000 games on your hard drive. It probably also doesn't help that I have 2,500 Rock Band songs on my hard drive.
Can you, like, when you have to contact Xbox support and tell them, my Xbox is fucking up, I have 2,500 Rock Band songs, what's the reaction there? Do they just go, oh?
And it actually happened when the Scorpio first came out. I got a Scorpio and I kept getting like E100 or E300 errors, something like that. Mm-hmm. Just basically I had to factory restore my system multiple times a day. And I talked with one of the software developers who works on the OS and all of that on Reddit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, I'm having this issue. I'm wondering if you could help me with it. And I explained it. I explained how many games I had. I explained how many Rock Band songs I had. And he was like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And I found out that it was not a problem with the consoles because I was replacing the console thinking the console, I just had bad luck with the systems because I had bad luck with PlayStation. I figure it's just my luck. And he told me to rejoin the preview program and get the latest alpha update and it was fixed. So it was legitimately a thing of the system wasn't designed to handle as many games as I had for it.
Well, I mean, if you really stop and think about it, how many people even buy, even if you bought all of the triple A's that come out in a year, you're not even going to get close to what we end up having to deal with indies and stuff over just 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's not something that they really expect their base customers to do. We're the fringe is what I'm trying to say. We're weird.
I'm the fringe of the fringe because I'm the moron with 3 hard drives to support all of those games instead of just letting my ready to install list fill up like a normal sane human being.
I don't know that I would say I'm sane either, but that's my method for dealing with this issue.
It's more sane than having 3 external hard drives hooked up to your console. That's for damn sure. Last bit of news I have, Kingdom Hearts 3 is reported to have over 80 hours of content with the main story taking 40 to 50 hours. And in this day and age, is that too much game?
I have ADD just waiting for you to finish that sentence. Why do we have so much? I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing.
I just wonder if it's too much. Like, how many people are actually going to complete a 50-hour story anymore?
There are those that do, though. And it goes back to the whole, there are some people who only buy 1 or 2 games a year. So if somebody's, like, really big into Kingdom Hearts, and they're like, oh, this is the only Kingdom Hearts, or the only game I'm going to play for maybe 2 or 3 months, they're probably going to be pretty thrilled that they're going to have 80 hours worth of content right out of the door.
But I'm going to guess those people who only buy a game or two a year are also on the fringe.
Also,
just in the opposite direction.
I I used to be one of those people before I started reviewing games and getting literally everything.
Yeah.
So I used to, I mean, when we had the 360, we had a rule, me and my husband, because he does play, just not as much as I do. But we had a rule that we would only spend the money on a game if both of us were going to play it. Because games aren't cheap, and we're poor.
True.
And so that was our way around it, you know. And the only time that there was really an exception to that was if there was something maybe in along the lines of a $5 or $10 indie game. So this is how I ended up with games like State of Decay and Peggle, is that I would, you know, catch them on, like, crazy sale. I think I've mentioned it before, but I bought State of Decay on the 360 when it was on sale during New Year's for 99 cents.
Which is a pretty solid purchase.
Right? And so it was just, unless there was something crazy that I bought really cheap like that, we just didn't buy games. So whatever I had, we played all year.
Yeah. I don't know. Speaking of all these games, we should probably dive into the reviews, huh?
I guess we could.
Because we got a buttload of those tonight.
But look, you know, this is going to devolve into shit jokes, isn't it?
You're the one going there, not me.
I'm just trying to make Aroto feel better if he listens.
That's all on you. That shit is all on you. You're just the shit with the on you. Shit on you.
Nailed it.
Yes. First game to talk about tonight is called Castaway Paradise, developed and published by Stolen Couch, released July 31st on Xbox One and PS4 for $12.99. Your adventure starts when you get stranded on a tropical island. This is your island, your adventure. Do whatever you like. It's the ultimate sandbox sim. Do you like Animal Crossing or Harvest Moon? Castaway Paradise is the game for you. Cole, what is Castaway Paradise?
Castaway Paradise is basically everything you just said.
Yeah.
You wash up on a, you can't say deserted island, but just a random island, I guess.
On a tropical island.
Yeah, a tropical, lovely little tropical island. And you're covered up in kelp. And you first meet Victoria, who is the mayor, and she's also a pig. And at this point, she, you know, goes through a tutorial phase where she's like, oh, help me by picking up the trash. And you're like, okay, and you pick up the shit. And then they give you the whole, you know, are you a boy or a girl under that kelp? And you choose who your character is going to be. And from there, she's like, hey, guess what? You're here. I guess you didn't have a life wherever you came from. So you're staying, and
that rings a bit true, huh?
It was a little too real. So she gives you a lovely little tent on the island, and it's now your place to do everybody's bidding so that you can stay there.
Like, the people on this island are fucking helpless.
They really are. They can't do shit for themselves.
They can't do, like, shit by themselves.
Oh, woe is me. There's a banana peel on the beach 4 miles on the other side of this island, and I need you to go get it. And so it's funny because each of the characters, they give you quests. And sometimes the quest will be something as simple as delivering an item to another character, and they'll literally be standing side by side.
Run this next to me.
Yeah, it's like, take this letter to Gustav. And you're like, but Gustav's standing right there. Why didn't you just hand it to him?
Listen here, you little shit. You're on our island now. By the way, all I could do is just listen to your bunny stomping around.
She's having a temper tantrum. I think I'm making too much noise for her.
I just kicked the cage a few times. See if that helps.
No. Lucy runs the show around here. Look, that rabbit weighs 20 pounds. When Lucy says Lucy gets what she wants, and that's just all there is to it. We don't fight Lucy.
Swizzler's asking, is pineapple on the pizza on this island? I hope not. That's gross.
I don't think there is pizza on this island. There's bugs. You can catch bugs.
And
you
fish.
Can catch fish. And you can find seashells. And I'll get to those in a moment because those are also the bane of my existence. they're right up there with composition notebooks. so the whole premise is basically just do what everybody on the island tells you to. You can grow trees. You can grow flowers. You start off with one little garden area that you can rake in and plant in. You can grow vegetables. Eventually, you can, you know, expand the island by opening up some different areas and have two little plots. It's not, I don't want to compare it to, say, like Stardew Valley, even though it's in that same kind of genre, because Stardew Valley lets you literally do anything you want with your area on your farm. Whereas this is like, you can grow here and nowhere else.
This game is more on the Animal Crossing side than the Harvest Moon side.
Yeah. So it's surprisingly limited. Now, for the rest of the island, you really can just kind of drop your furniture or a banana tree or a flower or whatever, wherever you want. One of the funny things, though, is that there's an ape. And if everybody calls him a monkey and he gets mad, he's a horribly grumpy little bastard named Angus.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
And it never fails that literally whatever you've done, Angus is going to tell you to undo it if you go to him for a quest. Like, oh, you just planted 50 banana trees and you're so proud of those banana trees and you're going to make so much money when you sell those bananas. I can guarantee you Angus is going to tell you to dig up 3 banana trees. Chop that shit down.
Speaking of digging up things, how many fucking tree stumps just appear out of nowhere on this island?
The tree stumps and the rocks just come out of nowhere.
Where do these rocks come from? They're giant rocks that just show up everywhere, and they come from nowhere. They're like the rocks in Animal Crossing where you could, you know, once a day you can hit one and money comes out. Except in here, they just give you experience if you destroy them. And they just show up constantly. In Animal Crossing, like 5 weeds would appear a day. In this game, it feels like a dozen weeds appear every day.
Yeah, and the rocks. Which, I think it's a kind of important that there are that many, because that's your main source of experience. And once you get to certain levels, you can actually buy a golden pickaxe and you get 4 times the experience for killing those rocks. Then you kill them. There's no other way to say
murder
it, because you're
rocks.
So frustrated that they're in your way that you're just murdering the rocks.
I wish there weren't so many. Wish there weren't so many rocks, so many tree stumps, and so many weeds that show up every day or every time you fire up the game. It's just a bit much.
But likewise, where there's so many of those, you know, pain in the asses that show up, there are not enough of the seashells. And the seashells are a necessary collectible. They show up once a day. If your beaches are dirty, you won't get no seashells. Fuck you. Because I made a mistake and I missed a tire when I was cleaning shit up. And I come back the next day. I know I stretched it. To not say it the dumb way, but I still said it the dumb way. But if you miss it and you come back the next day, fuck you, you have no seashells. And you need those seashells for the collectibles by donating them to the museum. And you, ideally, the game wants you to donate every type of fish, every type of seashell, and every type of bug.
Yeah, if you want
all the
achievements.
All the badges. So, or if you're just a completion whore.
And which means you want all the achievements, which, by the way, I love the achievements in this game so much.
Every fucking one is an odd number.
They are. There's like 6s and 3s and 1s and 9s. It is a magical medley of gamer score that is not 0s or 5s. There's a couple of 0s in there. I think I saw a 5 or 2, but it is mostly non-zero and non-5, and I love it for that. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it.
I'm a little disappointed because for all of the time that I put into it, and for everything I've done, I'm at 990 out of 1,000 on the achievements. So for all of those odd-numbered achievements, I'm still at a 0.
Oh, I was Jesus. Like, fuck. I can't believe you got that that fucking far in, what, a week?
About a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Did you play any other games?
Yeah, I did. A lot of them. We'll get to my notes here in a minute. But yeah, I've been busy. But I think that's the thing about it, though, is that once you get over the initial hump of, like, playing for a couple hours straight to unlock most of the items, really you're going to boil it down to, I'm going to load it up for 10, 15 minutes here or there, clean out shit, get my XP, see what I've got to donate to the museum, and sign off for the next of the, you know, for the rest of the day.
Yeah, it very much is a game that you're going to come back to multiple times a day for a few minutes instead of just binging it for hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've found there's an achievement for planting all the flowers. In order to do that, you have to reach level 34. I'm at 25. And so, like, I've tried to sit and grind out that experience, but where you only get one or two at a time. And it's just like, even with the gold, like I said, you get four per rock. And it's just like, okay, I hit my attention deficit wall long before I actually get where I need to be. So I'm at this point, like, I'm leveling up once a day. There is somebody who has already managed to hit the experience wall, though. Like, there is somebody who has the plant all the flowers achievement.
Damn.
Last time I checked, but it's been a couple days, but the last time I checked, the seashells and the badges that you have to donate to the post office.
That says a lot about the achievement points in that you have a couple that you're missing, but only 10 points left.
Yeah.
Where you get a lot for the easy ones. You get a lot of points for the easier stuff. And as they get harder or more into the game, they get worth less, which I kind of like that. It makes you feel accomplished in your first hours of the game.
Yeah, it does play into that. Look, I did a whole lot, and the rest is just really hard luck based shit that may or may not happen.
Yeah.
And so you don't feel penalized. Yeah, I'd like the completion. I'd like to get it done. I've put a lot of time into it, but I don't particularly feel penalized for not having all those fucking seashells yet.
Yeah. Well, we put a lot of time into this as well, so I'm going to call it here. $13 for this one. What do you think of it?
I did give it a buy it. I had a lot of fun. And it might not be the most polished. I did have a couple of issues. The main one being that there's some funky shit that happens with the quests on the side where they're displayed. Sometimes it would show up like raw code instead of telling me what type of flower I was supposed to water.
Interesting. Like I didn't see that.
Yeah, it would say water and then have brackets and say amount underscore ID bracket. I was just like,
I wonder if that was just a pre-release bug.
It could have been. It may, because I did play before launch for about 2 weeks or so. Yeah. So it could have been fixed by now. My only other major complaint is you cannot cancel a quest. Once you've got it, you're stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you better figure that shit out. It would be nice to be able to get rid of one, because sometimes I would get a quest, like I had one, it was like, clear out 5 cobwebs, I think it was. Yeah, cobwebs are another one of those things that just show up once a day.
Yeah.
And you might only get one or two. And I was like, okay, I'm stuck with this quest and I can't get experience for like 3 days because this is here. So it would be nice to just be able to say, nope, not gonna fuck with that right now.
I agree, though. I think $13 is a really, really solid price for the game. There's a lot to do. It does get repetitive after a while, but that's going to be the Animal Crossing syndrome, where either you really enjoy doing the daily grind, or you'll do it for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and just move on to something new. But you'll occasionally come back and visit it every now and then. And for $13, I mean, Animal Crossing is $40-$50 for their games, and to get one for a fraction of the price, I say go for it.
Yep, I agree.
Next game to talk about is called Road to Balhalla, developed by Torchtill, published by Tiny Build, released August 1st on Xbox One and PS4, August 2nd on the Switch for $14.99. roll and be trolled on your journey to the legendary place called Valhalla. Follow the beat to overcome deadly hazards in sync with the music, style your balls and marble awful puns in the role-playing game of the year. Get it, roll?
No, oh boy.
Carnage just said it in chat, this game is ballin'.
Oh, God.
This game is hilarious. Gameplay, you have to get a ball through a course, collect some yellow crystal collectibles, and get to the exit with as few deaths as possible. And the game will go out of its way to try and trick you into killing yourself quite a bit. It's just, it is ridiculous with how badly this game will make fun of you if you do poorly. It's like, oh, this is a dead end, and you go down it. It's like, oh, bet you feel stupid for coming down here, don't you? When there's literally nothing there. Or it's like, these blue tiles look like they could transport you to another dimension. You roll onto it and you explode. Like, I guess not. This game is a dick. Gameplay-wise, like I said, you have to go through these courses. They start off easy enough where you just have to, you know, roll, be careful with what you're doing, dodge lasers and dodge red tiles, which will hurt you. You do have a health gauge in the game. There's also a... Oh, Carnage, I'm reading what he's saying. Part where you could change your virtual skin, and it says something about horse armor DLC. I didn't see that part. I missed the horse armor DLC joke. It's funny as hell, though. But, what the hell was I saying? Damn it, Carnage throwing me off. There's a boost mechanic. You could either use the trigger or the A button, which will allow you to move faster so you could try getting through some trouble areas quicker. The downside is if you hit anything that would normally damage you while you're boosting, you will die immediately. So you have to make decisions on if you want to take a little bit of health damage and go slower, or if you want to try racing through it and maybe you don't make it through. You never know. And no matter what you do, the game will make fun of you for it. It really does. There's a narrator, which is basically just text on each of the stages that continually gives you hints or tells a story of the stages you're on. And then it makes fun of you a lot. It has awful puns. It has awful jokes. And I loved every single one of them. This is like Carnage the video game with the puns in it. It is incredible. Just to show you how trolly it gets, there is a hole on one of the stage select areas that says, do not enter. And if you enter it, it basically starts a conversation of like, why did you enter here? 'Cause I felt like it. And then it'll kick you out and you could roll back. There were 20, 30 different conversation bits by rolling into the hole because, you know, once you start it, you got to see it through to the end. And of course you get, it's like, if I give you an achievement, will you go away? And you eventually get an achievement and the hole closes up and you can't go back in it again. It's incredible.
That's amazing.
it's a ball rolling puzzle game that had me laughing audibly in my house as I just see this game making fun of me. The courses, obviously, they get harder as the game progresses. Like I said, starts easy enough where you're just trying to get through these courses. Take your time, be careful. It does throw some twists in there with some chase sequences where balls are rolling after you. Balls. There are some stages where it changes the perspective on you, but the D-pad and the analog controls are still based on what the normal camera would be. So if you weren't a fan of tank controls, like I was full on moving my controller and holding it in different positions so that I could go in the direction I wanted to. It throws you off so bad when you hit up, but you move left instead.
Wow.
It's one of those things. And it'll like tilt on angles. There's a stage where balls will rain down from the ceiling and crush you. It just, the game gets tough. Each of the stages has 100 points worth of crystals, not necessarily 100 crystals in each one. And you are graded on the number of deaths that you achieve in a level and the number of crystals you pick up. You can get up to 4 medals based on each of those. So a maximum of 8 medals per stage. The more medals you unlock, the more stages that unlock and the more secret stages that unlock in different areas and, you know, the next worlds that you could go to. Achievements in the game are probably going to drive people nuts because there's an achievement, obviously, for getting all the medals in every stage.
Ouch.
Yeah. And it is tough. It is pain in the balls hard with how tough some of these levels could get. And I'm one of those guys. I'm a perfectionist, so I need to get all 8 medals before I move on. And there's some brain twisting puzzles in some of these levels where you gotta go certain ways, pick up certain things in a certain order, get back in a certain time frame, rush through it. It gets difficult, but it is really, really solid. I think that covers everything with the game. It's a lot of fun, really funny. $15. I think it is worth it if you are a fan of games like Marble Madness or Super Monkey Ball. If you're not a fan, yes. If you love balls, you will love this game.
Sorry.
Yeah, Carnage mentioning Marble Blast Ultra. If you're a fan of any kind of game that revolves moving balls and getting into things, you're going to have fun with this one. If you're not, it's probably not going to change your mind, but you'll probably have a good laugh either way. So $15, I say buy it.
Nice.
Indeed. Next game to talk about is called 1979 Revolution Black Friday, developed by Ink Stories and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati. Released July 31st on PS4, August 2nd on the Switch, August 3rd on the Xbox One for $11.99. Based on true stories and historical events, the year is 1978. The place is Tehran, Iran. You play a photojournalist who returns home to find his people protesting the ruling king, the Shah. Armed with your camera, you're soon pulled into a dangerous world of revolution and civil unrest. Cole, what is this one?
This is, first, I want to point out that your America is showing, because you said Iran. It's like, or you said Iran, I think. It's Iran. That's Iran? How they pronounce it in the game. You're supposed to pronounce it Iran.
Well, I'm American, so fuck you. How about that? My American is showing. America. No shit.
Okay, so.
Tyran.
Tehran, I think. Tehran.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Iran.
But yeah. Oh, Lord. There goes Carnage already. So I'm ignoring chat now.
I ran so far away.
So this is a, I don't want to say point and click, although I guess it could technically qualify as a point and click adventure. Very narrative driven game that's reminiscent of early Telltale games. You have your decision-making elements to propel the story, and there are consequences for the shit you do or do not choose. And you will have moments where you are exploring the world, where you are playing as a young man in 1970s Iran. And he is a photographer named Reza, who has recently returned from Germany and has discovered that his country has gone a little chaotic, for lack of a better word. There's a political uprising where the people of Iran have decided that, you know, despite all of their differences, whether they be leftists or communists or, you know, atheists or Islamic or whatever types of ists that people could be at the time, they put all of that on the back burner in hopes of removing the regime of the Shah, who is, as it's heavily based on reality and events that actually happened, there's been horrible instances of the government imprisoning people for free speech. Poverty is rampant.
So it's a comedy.
Totally. this is a really difficult subject to even talk about, because it is based in historical occurrences that are not that far in the past.
Yeah.
So there's the whole element of taking something such as a serious historical event and creating a dramatic entertainment element for it. But I want to say that this was done incredibly well for the sake of this story. There's you know, the kind of drama and tension that you would anticipate, the characters were, I think, having the element hanging over your head that this shit really happened, kind of made you attached, at least in my case. I felt more attached to the characters and what they were going through throughout the case of the story. It's not the most polished game visually. It does have some rough graphics. The character models are kind of repeated a lot. You'll see the same model with just a few different little tweaks to it. But for all, oh Lord, the faces are stiff too. Oh gosh. But for all of the visual shortcomings, the voice acting in this game carries it. You're just like, I don't care if their mouths aren't even moving while they talk right now, because the voice actors were so sincere. I don't think I've ever played an indie game with voice acting that was so poignant to the story itself. Hmm. Like, there was an actual moment that was just incredibly tense. And at the resolution of that moment, like, I had to just set the controller down and take a breath and kind of get over it before I could go on. And I did not expect that kind of reaction from a game like this. I keep bringing up the historical context to it. There's one thing that is incredibly neat. Like I said, for the gameplay, a lot of it is based on that quick decision making for the narrative. Like, you know, say something or don't say, or be silent or choose a side, like you would expect from a Telltale game. There's also the quick time events, but there's also moments where you take photographs of the protests and what's going on around you. Because Reza is a photographer, this is his primary goal, is to show the world what's happening in Iran.
Yeah.
And so to do that, you use his photograph. There's a slider at the bottom. You look around the scene until you get like a green ring in your focus ring. Will turn green. And that's how you know you're somewhere where you should be taking a picture. And then you'll press A when the slider at the bottom gets in the little marker.
I got to say, I feel kind of bad putting this game right after a game where we talked about balls a lot.
Yeah. It was such a sharp twist for you to go from talking about balls to me being like, there was murder and poverty in the streets.
I didn't know this game was so heavy.
Yeah. But one of the amazing things is you take those photographs, and then once you capture the image, it will come up and show you the image you took of the streets or whatever is happening alongside the actual image that scene was based on.
Oh, wow.
And then it will give you a little bit of information about, you know, this is poverty being rampant, or this is how people protested, or this is a statue of the Shah that was torn down during a protest, or the police beat, you know, people in the streets. And it's incredible to just get those realistic little historical tidbits about, you know, a major political event that happened in this country that I had no idea even happened. I'm very American in that way. I'm just like, I don't know. The rest of the world exists. But I'm also a bit of a nerd. And so I really enjoyed how they threw in the little realistic tidbits. You know, there was one instance where you were walking around a theater that was being used as the home for the resistance. And you can explore all these different aspects of the different people's lives. And it fits in, it tries to fit in, you know, a very diverse country within a small area, which I appreciate that it did, even if it was kind of forced to like dumb people down, like to one person kind of representing a whole big movement at that time. it was still a really respectable way they went about doing it. One thing that was interesting was there was a character who had photographs of the victims of the government attached to his clothes. And so this is how in the 70s in Iran, that's how they memorialized people who were brutalized by, you know, the regime that was in control. They just walked around with photographs of them attached to them for everybody to see. And so then you get to meet that person later and you can ask him questions and he'll ask you to pray with him. And you have that choice, you know, do I want to bother with that part of the story or do I want to continue on? So it was incredibly well done. You could tell a lot of care was taken to portray the story accurately without
and seriously.
Yeah. And seriously without compromising it so that you were like, okay, this is a history lesson wrapped up in a game. Like it felt like something you wanted to care about. And the characters were genuine. So
well, then I gotta know $12 on this one. What do you think of it?
I can't believe it's only $12. So buy it. I mean, it could be a little prettier, but oh well, it's the rest of it is solid enough that you will not mind.
Nice. Sounds good. I might have to check that one out myself.
Do it, because I said so.
Maybe I will. Don't peer pressure me.
Peer pressure. That's what I'm here for. That's my whole job on this podcast. It's just to peer pressure everybody into buying the games that I thought were good. This is true. A good one, and everybody needs to go buy it. If you like those kind of telltale narrative-driven games, yeah, it's a serious one and it's emotional, but it's good.
Cool. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called Anamorphine, developed and published by Artifact 5, released July 31st on Steam and PS4 for $19.99 and is compatible with Vive, Oculus, and PSVR headsets. Explore the past as you resolve the present in Anamorphine, a surreal adventure of rendered emotions. Journey into the mind of the main character, a young man in denial. His subconscious is pushing him to face his past or be consumed by it. Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Spooky. Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in her review, and here's what she's got to say. Anamorphine is a fairly simple walking sim. It's fairly simple as most puzzle work you have to do for it is to find something that glows and look at it until it stops glowing, then repeat. It tells the story of Tyler and Elena and their life together. It is a beautiful but bittersweet story. Stories told by walking through fragments of their lives via Tyler's fragmented memories. Most of the game is effectively a still shot. You can walk around, but nothing, including Elena, moves. It reminds me of a much cheerier version of P.T. because most of the game is played while inside their apartment. As you go through it, some doorways lead you into the apartment at a different time, only for you to turn around and be met with a closed door or a closet. It's really surreal. Tyler is a photographer, which is why everything is still shots, I guess. While Elena is a cellist, I guess? C-E-L-L-I-S-T. I'm going to go with cellist. Like, plays the cello?
Yeah.
Seemingly of some renown. I bring both their jobs up to explain why the game's visuals are still shots and why the music is, you guessed it, all cello. Beautiful cello music, I might add. There are also sometimes orchestral music, because again, she has some renown. It's a good thing the music is so beautiful as there's no voice acting. There are other sounds, but the main focus sound is music when it's around. Everything else is less than even secondary. I would love to tell you more, but the game is around 2 to 2.5 hours long, so I don't want to spoil the story. There's a couple of endings, 3 at least, a neutral, a light, and a dark. The latter 2, I assume, mean good and bad endings. I managed to get the neutral ending on my playthrough, and I plan to go through to find all 3 of them. Game is going to be $20. If you only plan to play through it once, it's hard to recommend it a full price, since one playthrough shouldn't take you even 3 hours. However, if you plan to see all 3 endings, that makes it much more recommendable, since each playthrough should take you a while, because Dark Mika, you gotta proofread these. Because it'll take you around 8 hours worth of gameplay instead of just under 3. I think it's a beautiful game. It was on my wish list for a year, just waiting for it to come out. Granted, at the time, I was expecting some more puzzles in it. I found that even without any real puzzle work, the game is so beautiful, not just in visual and auditory way, but it's also beautiful in the story and that it's being in the way it's being told. It's a good game that I think most people will enjoy. the story of. So most people I say get it ASAP. For those who only want to play it as a one and done, wait till it's half off, then immediately buy it. Sounds good.
Yep.
I hope it comes to Xbox.
Yeah, as soon as you said horror, I was like, aw.
Yeah, only Steam and PS4 for now. Maybe if it does well, it'll come to Xbox. So fingers crossed on that one. Hey, Artifact 5, if you're listening,
give, please.
Hook us up. Next game to talk about is called Bomber Crew, developed by Runner Duck Games, published by Curve Digital, released July 10th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Chocks away, Bomber Crew is a strategic simulation game where picking the right crew and keeping your bomber in tip-top shape is the difference between completing your mission or losing it all. Cole, tell us about this one.
This is basically a management simulator tucked inside of a World War II era bomber. It's a little more complicated than that. You do start off in the very beginning by choosing your crew who is going to be on your bomber, and you have to be very careful and choose wisely because you cannot kick the people off. If you listen to our interview with the developers, you know that you are stuck with whoever you got because they want you to form an attachment to these, to the members of your crew.
Bunny's getting pissed again.
Yep, there she goes. But you literally are just stuck with whoever you choose. So you'll want to pay attention to what level the characters are. You'll want to pay attention to what kind of skills they have available to them. They have different, what's the word I'm looking for? They have different attributes, like how long they can, what types of temperatures they can tolerate. But you can also adjust these by buying gear for your plane that will let you add, say, different types of clothing, which makes them more sustainable at higher altitude so that they don't freeze to death when you go up above the clouds, or oxygen. If your tank, if you lose your oxygen systems, you can have bags of oxygen to help them out. So that's basically where you start at, is choosing your crew. And then once you're in your bomber, you will select a mission to send them on. These are some pretty historically accurate missions that you're going to go on. They're rooted in history. They're not like 100%. There's been some artistic license. Like, you're not going to be zooming along with 100 other bombers. You're the only one out there. Yeah. But the stories surrounding them and the circumstances are rooted in history. Once you are in the bomber and you are taking off on your mission, that's where the management side really kicks into high gear. And that's
is definitely not a shooter. This is not a space shooter. This is straight up sim management.
Yes. So you get kind of a cutaway of the bomber, and you will literally select different members of your crew and send them out for tasks. Oh, you want to put somebody on the turret gun? Okay, fine, but stop and get some ammo first because there's none back there. You want to have, you have a bomber and you want them to put, drop bombs from the bottom of the plane? Fine, pick up some ammo, send them to the front of the plane, send them down into the pit, open the doors. You have to really do everything. You have to load up the bombs, and then you have to wait until the pilot has gotten you over the target. You need to pay attention to the little maps that will pop up and target at them so that your navigator tells your pilot where the fuck to actually go.
You gotta look out for damage and, send your mechanics out to repair stuff because things are always gonna break.
Do not leave your engineer on the wing of the plane. Do remember, you have to tell him to crawl back inside.
Yes.
So all of this is going on, and at the same time, you're being attacked. There's flat guns on the ground. There's submarines that are attacking your boats that you've got to protect. There's targets to destroy. Sometimes you're sent on reconnaissance missions where you need to get your bomber down into the pit of the plane But instead of dropping bombs, you're just taking pictures. And so you need to get lined up and hit the button to take the picture at the right time. There's a lot going on. And you cannot pause and tell everybody where to go and then press play. You have to do it real time. You can kind of slow time down a little for a few seconds at a time. Then you have to wait for it to recharge.
Yeah.
But that's really it.
It that's adds your only tension. Reprieve.
Yeah, it adds tension to the game, but it also means that the game is just really fucking hard, and you're going to fail some of those missions, whether you like it or not.
People are going to die, and you're going to cry.
You're going to lose your more. Crew, and then you're going to be like, no, we can't just let that happen. We have to go in so-and-so's honor, because every one of them has a name. You can actually rename them, too.
And they're going to die, so don't bother.
Don't name them the people that you don't want to see die.
I will say, if people want to hear more about the game, they should definitely check out episode 400, which has our interview with the guys from Runner Duck. But $15 on this one, what do you think of it?
I give this one a buy it, too. I do wish that it was a little easier to, like, queue up what you need to do as opposed to having your characters. Like, my biggest complaint is they will go to get the ammo, and then because I clicked too early, they won't go to the gun, and then I'll be like, oh, it's fine. We're shooting down enemy planes. And then you look, and they're just standing there. They're standing there by the ammo box, and I'm like, what are you doing?
You son of a bitch. Get back to your place. I'm gonna go with a try it on this one. I think it's just a bit too niche for most people, but if you're into sim games, you're really gonna enjoy it. If you're looking for an action game or a space shooter, a flying game, this isn't the game you're looking for, but you might still be surprised by it.
And if not, then you can fling your engineer off of the wing. Problem solved.
You could. Next game to talk about is called One More Dungeon, developed by Stately Snail, published by Rattleaka Games. Released August 1st on Xbox One for $7.99. Being a nameless adventure seeker, you have to get to the final level of the dungeon and destroy the obelisks, which is being used by forces of evil to invade the world. Use a melee weapon, magic staffs, and antique artifacts to burst way through hordes of enemies inhabiting a few game areas. Cole, what's this one?
This is basically a first person, I don't want to say shooter, because you do have a sword and a, well, I guess you shoot. Your staff thing can shoot. It's a first person shooter, roguelike dungeon crawler. It's procedurally generated. It has a very retro pixelated Minecraft type of art style to it. And it's not pretty.
I thought it looked kind of interesting with the whole 3D world, but all 2D sprites.
Right. Like it seems good until you put it in practice. Mm. And I'll tell you what, like you, when you're shooting at the enemies and they're shooting at you or they're coming at you, that whole 2D sprite thing isn't so bad. Once you kill an enemy, then the sprite kind of like turns into this little crumpled sprite on a square. And everything in the rooms are focused on your field of vision. So if you turn left, everything in the room, even if it's inanimate, will turn left so that it's still looking directly at you. Okay. Even if it's dead.
Interesting.
Like, oh, there's mushrooms over in the corner, but if I walk to the left, the mushrooms turn to the left. If I walk to the right, the mushrooms turn to the right. What is this? Why? And that happens with literally everything. Is there a barrel in the corner? Turn left to right. That barrel's turning with you. Likewise, I hope you like turning left or right, because that's the only way you can look. You cannot look up. You cannot look down.
That's like the old school, like the original Doom. This is
supposed to be drawn, inspiration from like Wolfenstein and Doom, which I said I liked earlier. But it's 2018, and maybe you should just let me control the camera. We have, you know, dual stick controllers for a reason now. And I just wanted to be able to look around.
I'm going to be devil's advocate and say that I wouldn't mind going back to the days of more simple aiming and simple looking around, where it's just left and right. You didn't need to be super precise. You didn't have to look up and down. I miss those days.
I don't miss those days. I didn't think it was going to be a problem, but it is. Like, it's just a pain in the ass to navigate, because sometimes until you kind of adjust to that's the way the game is, like, you'll walk into a room and there'll be a ladder on the wall and you'll be like, oh, I want to check out what's up that ladder. And then you walk over and you're like, right, I can't look up. I can't see what's around this. It's just a ladder on a wall for looks.
No.
That's kind of disappointing to figure out at first. And then it's just like, oh, you know, there's elements that make you feel like you want to look around and explore. Like, there will be grates in the ceiling and you have this sunlight shining in. And it's like, oh, but I can't look up at it. And for a game that focuses on, you know, exploring these dungeons, it's kind of hard to explore when you can only look left or right. And it's unnerving to explore when everything in the room follows you. I didn't want to explore it. I'm like, I just want to get away from the creepy mushrooms that are following me everywhere. And the TNT barrels. And there's an absolute shit ton of rooms on each level. And like I said, it is procedurally generated. It's different every time. There are 8 levels, and it seems like every 2 levels has a certain theme, which is fine, but when you play it over and over, even with the procedural generation, it's kind of like, okay, but now what? It looks the same every time. It's not shook up enough from room to room.
Yeah.
And that also makes it a little more difficult to actually navigate it. Like, once I figured out where the map and everything was, it was a little easier because I wasn't trying to rely on any kind of, I lost the word I was looking for. Landmarks. Well,
I didn't play it, so I don't know what word you're looking for.
Like, I was looking for, like, a landmark in the room to be like, okay, well, this is this kind of room, and that's that kind of... There's nothing like that. It's just, like, it all blends together. And it was really easy to just get lost and spend an exuberant amount of time. In order to actually progress through a level, you needed to kill the guardian sprite monster, that was there, that would drop a seal, and then you would be able to open the door that would actually let you exit that level and go to the next one. And it was just, like, you could find the seal on one side of the level, but then not remember where you saw the door that needed the seal on the other side, until you were just left kind of wandering around blindly.
Yeah.
Hoping, like, trying to use the little gray squares on the map to figure out vaguely where you were going to go.
Yeah.
It was kind of excessively frustrating, and it wore out its welcome a little quickly. And I'm sad about that, because I really wanted to enjoy this, but I just kind of didn't.
On the bright side, it's only $8, so I'm curious to know, for that low of a price, what do you think of it?
If you are really, really, really into dungeon crawlers and roguelikes, I would give it a fuck it. Why not? I already picked it up.
I just haven't played it yet.
If this is your first foray into roguelikes and dungeon crawlers, maybe try a different one. But I cannot give this like a resounding, oh, this is a bit, because it's not. It's very rough around the edges. It's definitely niche-y. It does have mutators that you can, like, when you do a run, you can pick up the coins and stuff, and you earn enough points at the beginning of the next run when you start over. You can buy these mutators and kind of make the game a little easier. But there are also some that make it harder. And if you're going for the completion in this one, just go ahead and, like, cry now. Because Like, there's achievements for getting through it with permadeath on, where you have, like, one hit and you're fucked and you have to get through all eight levels. There are portals to get through with spikes, and it's just, no.
Oh, well, can't all be winners, I guess.
And the fucking spikes, and everything rotates.
I don't know. I have a feeling you're making a mountain out of a molehill with the things turning, but I'll have to fire it up and check it out.
It's a lot more disturbing than you would think. Like, when you're, like, walking into a room, you're like, did I kill everything? Oh, it moved. Did I kill it? You're not sure. And again, because you can't look up and down, you can only look side to side. Of course, when you look side to side, there they go looking side to side with you. Don't know if you killed it.
Oh, well. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Fugue in Void, developed by Mosh Link, published by Sadak LLC, released August 3rd on Steam for $5.99, an interactive experience in which you can explore all kinds of mysterious places and dive into a world full of atmosphere. Let this experience unfold in your head. Let it inspire you. Another one from Dark Mika. Let's see what she's got to say. Fugue in Void is a walking game. I didn't include the word sim in there for a reason. The entire game isn't really a game. It's you're in an area looking at really weird architectures. You walk around and step on obvious pressure plates every now and then, which open doors, but beyond that, it's just looking around and chilling out with the music. I'm not even sure how I got to new rooms half of the time. There is no story or much of anything to speak of. The graphics are okay. Some of the structures are kind of cool. Most of it is just blocks, though. Music and background sounds are off-putting to me, but I'm sensitive to sound, so that might be why. Not sure if anyone still uses Windows Media Player or not, but sometimes the areas you were in, you'd see weird shapes and explosions of color along with sound. These areas reminded me of the screen you used to be able to pop up on Windows Media Player that would visualize the music and create shapes and shit for the music as it played. I put nearly an hour and a half into this, and almost 40 minutes of that was me not realizing that the first 10 minutes of the game is an intro that's unskippable, and I thought the game's visuals were freezing on me, so I kept restarting. So I played this for under a half hour, pretty much, which is all it took to complete. For $6, I understand they wanted a weird, chill fucking game, but honestly, I gotta go with a no. The music isn't that good, the atmosphere is a little creepy, but for like a chill 30 minutes or whatever you'd spend in this game, I'd rather listen to music on Spotify or watch Windows Media Player or watch some TV show or something. It's artistic, but I gotta go with a no on this one. Also, if you have photophobic seizures, definitely stay away from this. The exploding color and shapes I mentioned previously go black, then fill up with colors to the back to black over and over. Anyone else, I honestly think your time is probably better spent watching something on Netflix or listening to music. If it had puzzles or story or something else, I'd suggest it. But as it's just look at this weird shape structure, okay, now look at this one, ooh, and now watch this one. It just doesn't cut it for a game. It's a shame because the game honestly would fit perfectly for complex puzzles. The whole time I was hoping, just please give me a cool puzzle. But alas, that wasn't to happen.
Damn
indeed. I thought it looked cool, but I don't know.
Listen to us being harsh tonight.
I know. That's two in a row. Two deny-its in a row.
Ouch.
Oh, well, what are you going to do? Really, what are you going to do?
But at least nobody can say we're not honest.
Yeah, very true. Final game to talk about tonight is called the Z-Axis Continuum, developed and published by Laser Pant Studios, which is a fantastic studio name. Released July 30th on Xbox One and PC for $9.99. Escape a bizarre world by rotating the universe. Use portals, physics, time, and clones as floors become walls, walls become ceilings, left becomes down, and right becomes up. You manipulate time and space at will, but do you have the mind to solve the warped reality that imprisons you? Cole, did you have the mind to solve it?
No.
Color me shocked.
I like puzzle games. And this is a 2D puzzler. It seems very simple on the surface. And you will start the game. It ropes you in. It's like, hey, look what you can do. You can turn the screen left or right. And you're going to manipulate these, you know, different objects. Your little character who's moving around. Sometimes there will be platforms or cubes or balls, and you can manipulate those.
Balls again.
Balls! A giant ball. And ideally, you're going to hit some switches, and you're going to get from where we start you to this little glowing orby exit. There's not anything, you know, overwhelming story-wise here. It's just get to the exit of every level as fast as you can.
If you can.
If you can. You probably can't.
This is a hard fucking game. I'm just going to say it. This is a hard fucking game.
Yeah. I feel like I say that games are hard a lot, but this one was just legitimately, like, I started off so good. I'm like, man, watch me just roll through this. I'm completing levels in like 5 and 6 seconds. I'm nailing it.
And then the tutorial ends.
Then you hit a brick wall. Cause fuck you. That's why. And it just gets really fucking hard. I think that there's certainly a payoff and satisfaction when you finally figure out how to move the world and get where you want to go. But trying to do that and constantly, like, there were times where I found myself just holding the button and praying that eventually everything would line up. Like, if I hold it for a second and let go, did it work that time? No? Okay. Hold it for 2 or 3 seconds. Let go? No? Ah, fuck. Hold it the other way then. Because I was just getting frustrated. This was basically all I could do to try to get through it. There are dangers in some of the levels. And this was my biggest complaint, besides the whole this is fucking hard thing. Like, you could sit and figure it out eventually, but I felt like some of the collision and the hitboxes with the spikes and the other hazards and stuff just was not always on par. Like, sometimes I would be way too far from the spikes, but my little dude would go blah and die anyway and start me all over.
Yeah, I've also become wedged in between cubes and walls before, so that was fun.
Yeah, there isn't anything you can do but hit restart. And that wouldn't be so damning if it wasn't for the fact that there's no checkpoints. You restart, you have to restart the whole level. And some of these levels can take a pretty good chunk of time to get through.
Despite what the achievements for speedruns say, by the way.
Those can just fuck off.
Those speedrun times are liars.
Yeah, that's not happening. And I do want to touch on the speedrun thing, too. There are people who are obviously going to sit and master this game and speedrun the fuck out of these levels. And that's all well and good, but there are no leaderboards. So if you're doing that, you're just doing it for your own sake. Yeah. You're not going to have, you know, be showing off to anybody that you hold the speedrun record for level 7.
Yeah, leaderboards would be awesome in this game. It really would.
So, on the bright side, that means that unless you're going for the achievements, you can take your good old sweet time and figure out the puzzles at your leisure. Because there were a lot of times where I just sat there with my arms crossed and the controller at the table staring at the screen like, the fuck am I going to get out of this? Spoiler alert, I didn't get the fuck out of it.
And yeah, it is hard. We're not joking when we say this is a tough game. It doesn't have like an incline for the difficulty. It's just like a brick wall that you got to try climbing up. It is it's not gradual at all. It just hits you with the hard shit right out of the gate pretty much. And it's going to work your brain. It does sound like we have some gripes with the game, which we do. But personally, I think it's unique enough and different enough to look past it. Although I do wish you could swap the buttons for which way the world turns. I would constantly hit one button thinking it's going to turn one way, but it turns the other way. So I got to hit the other way twice to get it where I want to go.
Were you using the face buttons?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't use the face buttons. I used the triggers.
Ah.
And that way I kept myself on the straight and narrow. Want to go left? Move left. When I go right, hit right.
Carnage saying I can use the accessories app to change controls manually. I'd rather that be an option in the game.
Yeah.
Just let me alter, invert the buttons if you have to. Make it an option.
inverse. But yeah, I didn't have a problem with the controls. But again, that was just because I was using the left and right.
Yeah, I'm weird with controls like that in games that have rotation or looking. Like I always seem to be backwards with that, and I realize I'm probably in the minority, but we get
inversion. But apart from that, it is a simple looking game. It's not gonna wow you visually. It's, you know, not got anything in the way of an overarching story. It's just, this is the kind of game you sit down when you want to pick your own brain for a little bit and work through some of the puzzles. You'll feel satisfied as fuck when you finally do overcome one that's holding you down.
If.
Yeah. You know, you may not get through some of them, but yeah, if you do, you're going to feel like you could rule the fucking world, because these are some complicated puzzles.
I think it's one of those games where the developer played it enough himself that he didn't realize how hard some of the stages were.
Yeah.
Which we run into quite a bit on this show, where the developer just doesn't realize how difficult his game is because he's the one who's played it that much.
Yeah.
But overall, $10 on this one. I still give it a try. It's a really unique, really cool, really interesting. And despite the rough edges and the gripes we have, I still think it's worth trying out.
Yeah, I could give it a try, especially if you're really into those kind of puzzle games, especially the ones that are physics-based and just monumentally hard. There's a niche for that, and you're going to have a blast.
Or wait a few weeks and maybe we'll do a giveaway for it.
Yeah, the rest of us are going to just be sitting in the corner crying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. It gets hard quick.
Yes, right off the deep end.
Yeah. Anyway, that is it for this episode. Good stuff.
Seems like it was a good show, and it went longer than anticipated.
I knew it was going to go long just because there were a bunch of games and you had a lot of notes.
I did. I even, tried to cut down my notes. I didn't even write notes for one game. And I still talk too damn much.
Sometimes, yeah.
Can't help myself.
Music on this one, I think I'm going to play more music from State of Anarchy because I love the soundtrack in that game. And now that I found a website for the musician, I just want to give him more attention in the hopes that he'll do more music and have a bigger online presence, because it's cool shit. Nice. But that is it for this show. Cole, do you have any final words to end it, or is it pointless asking you?
I don't know why you keep asking me.
Because you're the co-host.
Yeah, but I've been doing this for, what, a year?
And do I your goddamn job.
I don't. Look, if I did my goddamn job, I wouldn't be on the show because I'd be taking care of my kids.
Your children are neglected. Yay!